So we have the magic marker? Is there one around? So you can write when necessary?
Okay.
All right, you can sit over there by Maharaj. I just need a Bhagavad Gita. Today we wanted to, at least this morning, want to discuss some things about forgiveness. And I'll break it up so we can salvage time. And then at Vrindavan's tonight we will discuss some things about trust. Actually, each of these topics, normally when I try to discuss them, I like to have almost like 3 days to a week. Forgiveness is a very deep issue, and I like to not only discuss it, but to help devotees to be able to have healthy transformation. But the few things that we can share can, I think, help us to have some tools to be able to address this very interesting topic. Let me just read something very briefly from Bhagavad Gita, relationship to forgiveness. This is Bhagavad Gita chapter 10, verse number 5, chapter the opulence of the absolute. And I'll just read, I'm going to really skirt through things so I can just touch upon a few essential areas. Translation: intelligence, knowledge, freedom from doubt and delusion, forgiveness, truthfulness, control of the senses, control of the mind, happiness and distress, birth, death, fear, fearlessness, nonviolence, equanimity, satisfaction, austerity, charity, fame and infamy. All these are various qualities of living beings who are created by me alone. In a purport, Prabhupada explains the forgiveness in Sanskrit is shama. He says shama tolerates. Shama means tolerance and forgiveness. This should be practice. One should be tolerant and excuse offenses of others. Prabhupada also explains how in the qualities of a brahmana, that the brahmana must be forgiving. That is one of the most essential qualities of a brahmana. Here also, in Bhagavad Gita 18, let's see, a second. When Prabhupada talks about the qualities of, well, I'll just explain it for the sake of time. Some of the qualities that constitute knowledge, we also find the prominence of forgiveness. So it is inherent. We look at the 36 qualities of a devotee. Our devotee is to be tolerant, tikshava, karunika, sante. Devotee is to not just play into ordinary concerns. And because the devotee is able to see things in the Krishna perspective, then one doesn't over or excessively react. Now we'll take advantage of this being an interesting time of the year where billions of people are reflecting about the appearance of Lord Jesus. And one of the major aspects about his incarnation was his stance of forgiveness. Just think of Jesus on the cross. And we're using this now because it is Christmas time, and we also honor such a Shaktivesha. Matter of fact, we can honor him properly because we are trying to focus on spiritual things, not just on commercialization, etc. Now, if we recall, one of the significant things when we think about the pastimes of Jesus is that there was shama, or there was forgiveness. Now, if Jesus on the cross would have said, "Hey, damn all of you guys, you're all going to suffer, and your relatives are going to suffer, and your whole village is going to suffer, and from time immemorial people are going to hear about your suffering for what you've done to me." But his message was, forgive them, for they don't know what they do. Now, I'm addressing this topic of forgiveness because, as we see in the Shastra, it's an essential quality of a devotee. It is a quality distinct quality of a Brahmana, one of the major qualities. It is a major quality we see of Krishna. He has all these opulences, Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. But we can also reflect that one of his greatest opulences is his mercy on the conditioned souls. So it is Krishna forgiving us at any moment. The Lord in the heart is ready to accept us. Regardless to how many abominable things we have done for so many different lifetimes. Now, I mentioned very briefly yesterday how forgiveness is so essential in healthy development of community and healthy development of our bhakti lata bija, of our devotional creeper. And we discussed how it's so important on developing the bija of the community. Some of you weren't here yesterday. We said there is like a jnana bija, a karma bija. There's a bhakti lata bija, which is our main focus. But there's also like a community bija that must constantly be protected, watered. Because community doesn't just happen. It has to be constantly sort of recreated, or we have to keep watering it with shared vision and shared mission and also shared aspirations. So, if we look at forgiveness, we see, if we go through practically every biography or story of each acharya, all the mahajans, all the sages, and if we had time, we do this course for a week, we would just go from one story to another and show how forgiveness was there and what quality of forgiveness, how it was manifested. But three very interesting examples, which I can give real quick, so we can do short course in 40 minutes, is during this time we look at Jesus. We also see the amazing example of Haridas Thakur. Now, in all these cases where persons had reason to be extremely angry, extremely vindictive, hold all kinds of grudges, but we see the opposite. That the great devotees, they try to use it to help the person. They try to understand it for their own growth. Sometimes they even see it as their own fault. Anyway, there are many, many categories, but we'll come to that. We see the one of my famous stories of Prahlad and Haridas is a story connected with Ramanujacharya and two of his wonderful disciples, Koresh and Mahapurana, and how they had every reason. Their own guru was being attacked, life-threatened, they were abused, they were tortured, on and on. And they forgave, and they even asked that such wretched souls would be liberated. Well, now, forgiveness means certain things and certain things it doesn't mean. One of the things that happens when we do not forgive, first is our bhakti cannot flourish properly because we shut ourselves down. Our ability to be able to be fully present in our sadhu sangha also gets limited. If you're too wounded, whoever you associate with, you're going to shed some of that woundedness, or you're going to block your ability to be able to have very wholesome relationships. When you're not forgiving, you're going to hurt who you're associating with. You're going to limit what you can do for your children, how you can associate and help your husband, your wife. If you do not forgive, not only will it hurt you in your spiritual growth, individually in your relationships, but it will also make you wretchedly ill. We have so many devotees in our different communities, as well as so many people in the secular world, who are coming down with chronic diseases. Their immune systems have become so weak because they're constantly assaulting their bodies, their cells, through what is going on in their minds. Now, when we do not forgive, it's like you're holding hot stones, boulders in your hand, waiting to when you can assault that person who's disturbed you, cheated you, abused you, neglected you, denied you, lied on you, whatever. You're waiting so you can just knock That person, with a huge, heavy knock, and destroy them if possible. But what happens? If I'm holding boulders, some hot stones in my hand, waiting for you to appear, or waiting for the time when I can just give it to you, what's happening to me? What's happening? I'm getting burnt. That's right. I'm getting burnt. I'm being so preoccupied and missing many opportunities to do many other things. I'm also dehumanizing myself because I'm carrying you with me day after day. Day after day, I'm letting whatever you did to me, I'm letting it happen again and again and again and again and again. Forgiveness means that whoever did whatever they did, it happened in the past. And we ain't going to let it happen today and let it keep happening to us tomorrow. Now, as I develop this, I want some help from you first. First, I want us to put a list of why there are some reasons why we do not forgive. Okay? What are some quick reasons that comes to your mind? Okay, let's put it. Selfishness. What are just very practical reasons?
Shastric
justification. Okay, that's interesting. We'll definitely come back to that one. There's a shot to you. Yes.
You think the person's not going to learn the lesson unless you are visibly observing.
You feel the person is going to get away? Oh, just put, you feel the person is not going to learn the lesson. Selfishness, shastric reference.
Like
revenge. We can't do it. Let it happen until we get our sufficient revenge. What are the other reasons?
You know how they say forgive and forget, so maybe you forget.
Okay, you forget, but you don't forgive. So if you forget, you forgive, then anyway, I don't want to go to that yet. Let's say forgive and forget complexity. Forgive.
Anger is a form of
cannot forgive. Okay. So you're suggesting that anger is an expression of sense gratification. We could do a week's discussion on anger. It's good and healthy and not healthy anger. But let us put our list. We can also make it personal. We're going to look at collectively. We're talking about family, community, but it's all also based on individual expressions and activities. In our own minds, sometimes, what are reasons that we have trouble forgiving, or what are some of the reasons why we don't forgive, or we haven't forgiven, someone?
One other thing I can think is that we get habituated to just think about the issue, even though we may not even have a reason.
Okay. It becomes a part of our identity. It becomes a part of our identity. It's like, there are many, many support groups, and they help in some ways, but sometimes they also stagnate people. People go for years and years and years. Oh yes, I'm also the child of an alcoholic parents. And they identify with that as their whole identity that goes on year after year. They hide behind it. They're afraid to grow away from that because it's become their identity. I'm also the product of one-parent family. I'm also the product of gurukula abuse. I'm also the product of leader exploitation. These are real things, but we can also cause them to attack us and assault us in unusual ways. A few more reasons why we don't forgive?
Because we're hurt and we don't feel like we're being heard.
Okay. Because we are hurt
and we
don't feel like we are being heard. Okay, a few more?
It's sometimes seen as weakness.
It's seen as a weakness. Anyone else? Yes, Maharaj.
One other thing I thought is that it's much easier if the problem is somewhere else. We don't have to worry. We focus on
Okay. We scapegoat goat, or we blame. We use it as a scapegoat. Sometimes we use a scapegoat not to do what we can do. As a scapegoat. Okay, maybe one or two more.
Mm-hmm. Self-righteousness.
Okay, self-righteousness.
Intimidation.
Okay. Let us stop there. I mean, we can go on and go. Let's put number 10. Self-righteousness. Now, we look at this. We realize, as Kaji mentioned, that in Shastra, in a perfect Vedic civilization, when someone does something wrong, they must be chastised, proportionate to the degree of the crime. If they're not called out, they're not chastised. If evil or bad isn't recognized and categorized, then good has no meaning, has no purpose. But in Vedic civilization, we chastise, we give some restriction, etc., due to the quality, the caliber of the crime. After punishment, there must be forgiveness. Understand that? If we don't punish, we don't call out, we don't tax, we don't have some way to single out deviation, then deviation becomes dominant, becomes prominent, and we have a culture of deviation. But the Vedic ruler, the spiritual ruler, chastises because the person is to be helped so that they don't continue doing. It sends a message to community, this is not allowed. And it helps to draw attention to what is proper. But there must also be forgiveness. Many times, we as devotees have some of the most difficult ability to forgive because we think that we've already forgiven. Or we have the most difficulty in forgiving because we also understand what is proper behavior more than materialists, atheists, etc. So in one sense, we should have more facility to forgive. It's like when Prabhupada was being harassed, you know, by the Indian doctor when they were going on walks, and the devotees were very disturbed. Prabhupada says, I must have done something to him in a previous life. We understand so much about karma. We also understand how there's no accidents. And we also understand that we want to forgive. We want to forgive because we also want to be forgiven. Because there's so many times we have unconsciously, as well as consciously, hurt so many people in our lives. We ask any of you who doesn't have somebody to forgive. Everybody has someone who's harmed them, who's abused them, who's disappointed them, who's cheated them, who's offended them in some way. And anybody who said they don't have, they're in the worst condition. And I tell you, they have chronic sickness and they're totally in denial because it means they're internalizing it all as if it is not happening and they're in denial. Remember yesterday I said how what happens in our mind affects our body, which affects our consciousness. We do not feel loved when we're feeling forsaken, we're holding grudges, when we're feeling angry, we become 10 times more susceptible to chronic disease. Hear that. Some of us got now, you know, extended diseases. Some of these things have some part to do with some stuff that we're holding on to. It can enhance any disease, chronic disease, cancer, hepatitis, diabetes, any chronic disease will be enhanced and sometimes it will be engendered from how we're holding stuff in. It affects the whole body. The doctors, just the other day it was symposium, health symposium, we had so many doctors, we were talking about things. And one issue is also just stress. That 80% of diseases are connected with stress. All goes back to consciousness. Now, our problem sometimes is that we think we've forgiven because we superficially recognize that the person is wrong. We superficially recognize that it's karma for them and somewhat for us. And we skirt over it and some deeper stuff is there eating us out.
Let us kind of take a notice in our own conscience real quick of if we've really forgiven someone. I want each of us, just for a moment, to think about somebody who really did you in, somebody who really disappointed you, somebody who really put you in anxiety in the past. Maybe it's still going in the future, but especially somebody in the past who you think you have forgiven. Maybe they even asked for forgiveness and you accepted it. We think of somebody who's been a botheration for you in some way. You just close your eyes for a minute and you just visualize that person just for, you know, 5 seconds. As you visualize that person, just think about hearing that person talk. You're talking to that person. You're physically in association with that person. Okay, just visualize that person who has given you some genuine pain in the past. You just hold that person in your mind for 5 seconds more. Okay, now, open your eyes. Now, some of us, we're having like curse words toward that individual. Some of us felt very uneasy just by sensing that we were in the presence of that individual. Some of us just felt tense when you held that person in your consciousness. These are some signs that you really haven't let that person loose. You haven't forgiven that person. These are some signs that that person is still assaulting, still attacking you, still dehumanizing you, still having some influence in your ability to be a merciful sadhu and your ability to be able to be a deeper lover and to be more fully present for your husband, your wife, your children, for your community, in your services. We look at why we don't forgive. We don't forgive because sometimes, as you're saying, selfishness. Sometimes we cannot understand, or we're willing to understand something about that person. Many people who have genuinely hurt us, they did the best that they could do with the facilities that they had at that time. We ain't saying at all that it was right and justifying it. But many times people, they have done the best that they could do with whatever they had in their grasp, in their understanding, their level of realization at that particular time. Persons will not learn. Sometimes we don't want to forgive someone because we're thinking, if we let this person go, if we forgive them, then it's as if what they did was okay and they will do it again. Shastic reference. Yes, we must call them out, but we also must deal with them so that they will not have to carry it through in the next life, so that they will be helped, because they will be helped by being chastised. They will understand there's deterrence and there is something that happens inauspicious if we do the improper thing. And when people are not so advanced in consciousness, they must be treated by rewards and punishments. Forgetting anger is an expression of sense gratification. Sometimes forgiveness is an expression of sense gratification. Something we wanted, something we needed, didn't happen, and we're too much caught up in our own egocentricity, and our anger is there really because of, again, selfishness, self-centeredness. It becomes a part of our identity. We hide behind it. We're afraid to step out of that. We hurt, and we don't feel like we're being heard, seen as weak, scapegoat, self-righteous. I want to make a list in our minds of what forgiveness is not. Forgiveness is not that you allow yourself to be a doormat and let people just assault you again and again and again. Forgiveness doesn't mean that what the person did or the persons had done, that it was okay. It doesn't mean that it minimizes what happened by forgiving them. It doesn't mean that you were wrong and therefore you can't forgive them, because if you give them, it suggests that you're wrong. It doesn't mean that they were right. It doesn't mean any of those things. What's important is for us to look at what it means. Because we often hold on to what it doesn't mean, we miss the chance for our own growth. Basically, forgiveness has more to do with what we do for ourselves. The other person We'll have to deal with the consequences. See, we do not forgive someone, we have to ask ourselves, how much must this person suffer before we can release them from our consciousness? Must they be run over by a train 5 times? Must they be eaten up and mauled by dogs? Must they be brutally stabbed by thugs, by dacoits? How much must they be tortured and suffer before we can say, okay, now I can let this person go because they've gotten what they deserve? Now think about a Vaishnava who's supposed to be the well-wishers of others, holding a mentality of just waiting to knock somebody with hot rocks, waiting for someone to be run over by a train, beat up, and then we hear about it and we think, oh, now I feel a sense of relief. They finally get what they deserve. Did you hear yesterday, such and such get ran over by a train? Now we can realize that he get what he deserved. How much must the person suffer before we can release them? And how much will we make ourselves suffer before we realize we have to stop letting that individual or that situation that was genuine and real keep attacking us every single day? We carry these burdens, we carry these grudges, we carry these rocks and these boulders, and it really checks what we can do. We have so many people in every community who will not chant their rounds now, who will not come for programs, who will not read, who will not associate, who will not get involved in trying to do what they can do because they are hurt and they are wounded. Hey, Haribo, this is also the material world. Now, any of us can say that somebody hasn't hurt us deeply? Anybody who says that they haven't had that experience, they're not being properly sensitive and emotional, and they're not being authentic. Part of our identity is that we've been pained and we've been hurt and we've been helped and we've been loved and we've been cheated on and we've been disappointed, and that constitutes our strength or our weakness. Just like sometimes you find some of the people who are the best, let's take health and we go to health, some of the people who are the best natural health practitioners are those who are suffering with a deathly illness and they healed themselves. And therefore, because they've been there and they've had such great intensity, that has made them a better person in knowing about health and being able to help others. The people who can be the best and being able to be there for others, to help others, to console, to grow from devotion, to pick up and be resilient, are those who have had some heavy, heavy experiences. And they've weathered through it. And this again is culture. Culture is when you have all a different, all categories of people in the culture, all generations feeling valued, feeling fulfilled, and being able to offer something. And so the elders are able to offer their wisdom, and a lot of their wisdom has to do with the pains and the miseries that they have encountered, which helps them to have wisdom to be able to pass on and to help others. So some of those in our communities who've been pained and cheated and hurt the most, they can be able to offer the most to community because they can be the ones who can pass down amazing wisdom, understanding, compassion. And so when they move to the sidelines, we, like yesterday I was saying, we must respect these devotees who have sacrificed so much. But we also have to keep a balance. Otherwise, we will also become like some of those who have moved to the sidelines, or who have lost their courage, or some of those who have even joined the adversary, we will minimize how dangerous that is. As warriors, we have to be able to keep ourselves fit, protect ourselves while we try to reach out and protect others. But at the end of the day, we have to take our own lives in our hands to make sure that we don't become a casualty or we don't become wounded. And we do, then through community, we try to help each other. See, always these extremes, one extreme to the other, can be dangerous. Healthy balances. We don't want to be insensitive to people with their struggles and their pains. We don't just say, oh, baboo, yeah, that's your karma. on our mind, in our internal mantra, we're thinking, I'm glad it happened to you and not to me. Huh? Sometimes this is the level of our sympathy on someone else. We're just thinking, it's unfortunate, but I'm really glad that it didn't happen to me. But the param dukkha dukkhi kripam buddhi is that we're to feel the happiness of another and also the pain. So, there are times now, and this may sound a little harsh, that all of us are making decisions every day. And many, many devotees all around the world have made decisions that they are not ready to make any more advancement in this lifetime. And because of that, they hang on to real things that have happened, and they let those things check their ability to make genuine progress. Maya has presented them some situation that they can learn from, use as a growth, or they can become stagnated by it. And many, hundreds and hundreds of devotees have allowed a genuine, some cases perceived, but in many cases it's genuine, but they have allowed that to justify they're not chanting their rounds. They've allowed that to justify they're not being a responsible parent. They've allowed that to justify they're not being a sadhaka. Those things identify genuine reasons, but they do not justify. Yes, they identify, and that's part of the healing process and what can happen with growth, but if we stay only there, we don't deal with rectification and transformation. See, these kind of issues that we're discussing are going to become more and more important in the future, because we're going to see more and more devotees get stuck, more devotees get confused, more and more devotees be bewildered, more and more devotees lose their faith in the community, in society, in Prabhupada, in Krishna, and more devotees who are coming to a point when they can go back to the spiritual world because they have so much credits from the past and they're ready to kind of withdraw those credits, then Maya will try to find a way to destabilize, bewilder many, many devotees at a time when they're at a major crossroads for growth. And this is going to have a tremendous assault on our communities, because some of these devotees will become our biggest enemies. Our biggest enemies are those who have been with us, who for perceived or real reasons have become, some of those, empowered for destruction. Kali is trying to come in. So Kali wants to come in big. For Kali to come in close, Kali has to come in using our own people to dismantle what we have. And so we're dealing with real issues of survival, that if we don't take better care of ourselves and better care of our people, then they're also going to become enemies, or they're going to become people who move to the sideline, who we lose resources, human, spiritual, and financial. It's so difficult. We have to keep training new people. That person, we put so much time, resources, now that person goes out and becomes a great amplifying bad propaganda force. We bring another person in. That so much of success is not just making new customers. And we're talking business time, because Krishna Consciousness is like a business also. But those who are getting the cutting edge, they are keeping same customers while making new customers. But most important, finding more ways to give same customers more things so that everything multiplies. We need to find more ways to keep people as we make new people, but more ways to engage people so that they create value. Otherwise, these people become a burden on the institution, burden on the community, and burden on themselves. Because that dysfunctionalism just begins to also to permeate. And we don't help them, and they don't help the society. But they share their unhealthy consciousness. So if we have so many people and so many projects who are just going around every day, I am the product of Gurukul abuse. I am the product of the husband who wasn't there. I'm a product of mother who was alcoholic. I am the product of single parent. Yes. I'm the product of incest, yes, and it's bad. And we forgive them, and it doesn't mean any of those things. It doesn't mean that what happened to you wasn't bad. It doesn't mean that what happened to you should just be allowed to happen again. It means that what happened to you was most unfortunate. That person will definitely suffer because karma is very heavy. But do you want to send them Yamaraj yourself, and how much you want Yamaraj to deal with them? Yamaraj will. But you don't want to take away from who you are and what you can be. So what, let's look at what forgiveness does mean. Let's put it on the board on the other side here. One, forgiveness means that I live in the present and in the future. See, we ought to learn from the past while we look to the future. We should not forget past, because if we forget past, it is guaranteed to happen again. We remember the past while we look toward the future. So we live in the present as we look toward the future. Live in the present, and in this way we can create an auspicious future. So many of us will have trouble creating an auspicious future because we keep living in the past. And the future is just an extension of the present. And so if we keep living in the past, then our present will be rocky, and our future is going to be more of the same. Whatever you put the most energy into, you're going to get more of that. Two, forgiveness means that you have suffered in the past, and you're making a strong commitment that you're not going to suffer on in the future, based on the same thing. That you have suffered in the past, it's genuine suffering. But you're not ready to suffer on and on, you know, in the future, because of the same thing. I would like to give a week's course, you know, for just taking guru coolies all around the world, for instance. They're so dominant and so wonderful and so powerful. But they have so many things that have happened to them, very unfortunate things. But also they have lost so much of what they are and what they can be because of what they hold on to. Or so many of us who've had fallen, so many of us have, you know, fallen spiritual masters who we just hurt ourselves so much by not being able to release and by being able to forgive. Forgiveness means, three, it means that I agree. Forgiveness means that we agree to be loving. By being loving means that now I can give my children love instead of cheating them because of the pain I'm holding on about something. I'm cheating my own children because I can't give them my full presence. I can't give them full love and full attention. But number four, forgiveness means I'm ready to accept deeper understanding also of karma. We'll go on and on, but just put one more. Forgiveness means I'm really ready to be a proper sadhu. Really imbibe the armor or the qualities, you know, of a sadhu. Five, I'm ready to be a high level sadhu. See, one of the things that's good for now. Our time is running quick. One area that's very important is trying to understand things by putting yourself in the other person's shoes. See, there are like four ways of dealing with almost any problem. Our dominant way, of course, is Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru. That is our transcendental spiritual way. It must always be there. But there are also some other dominant ways that can help us that are secondary but important. But let's put this on the board because this is very important. These things we can just throw out. You can process it later if you like. One is to put yourself in the other person's shoes. Two is to disassociate. Three is to be assertive. Take three first. First, sometimes we just have to say, do, make some stance. We have to be active and we have to go for it. Sometimes there's situations where we don't process, we don't think, we don't act upon it. We think it's somebody else's duty, somebody else's responsibility, and the problem goes on. So there are times we have to do our best, But be honest to evaluate what the results are. Disassociate. Sometimes we're too close to something and we can't really bring about any kind of resolution because we're too close to it. We're too much involved. When you see two people across the street and they're arguing, there's a Hare Krishna and there's a Krishna, and they're just going arguing at the top of their lungs. You see the veins popping, and you look at a distance and all you see is two people who look mad, who are enraged. And you realize that whatever they're saying to each other and whoever's right, both of these guys have lost it. So sometimes you have to move yourself as if you're not the person who's involved in what is going on and look from the outside and get another perspective of what that looks like. It can give you amazing tools sometimes of how to approach something. You take yourself as if you're an onlooker of the situation. If you're an onlooker of the community, the family, or whatever's going on. Even though you're a member, you look as an onlooker. The other one, put yourself in another person's position. Sometimes we need to be more sensitive where we move out of our own identity as if we enter into another person's body, another person's consciousness. This can help us to forgive. It doesn't necessarily allow us to justify what has happened. It doesn't allow us to consider that it wasn't so bad. But it can often help us to have more facility to forgive. Let me give a quick example. In my own life, my father was like very harsh. He was a tough guy. He was part, you know, Native American Indian. He lived to be 95 years old, never showed any sickness until he was about 94, died of cancer, drove his own car, painted his own house, did everything himself, even up to like 93 or so. My father collected a lot of money, never gave us hardly anything, never once told us he loved us, was very harsh, cruel, even threatened us with guns sometimes. Unbelievable. Anyway, you know, for a major part of my life, and even as a devotee, you know, I had a grudge, I had an issue with my father, yes. But as a devotee, and also understanding the need to grow, and also understanding other people's positions, I tried to study my father a little closer. What I realized is my father was doing the best that he could do with the skills and the experiences that he had. My father was a product of abuse. He was like the black sheep in his family. You know, in America, some of you may find this shocking, even in black families, sometimes there's prejudice based on, you know, skin color. So my father was from a family, everybody was light and he was dark. So he was like singled out and always kind of told, you're going to be a failure, you're useless, you're this, you know, you're that. And so he was so ingrained in his mind that he was useless, that he was constantly trying to prove that he wasn't, that he was the best. And he overcompensated to such an extent that he was obnoxious. And that he did everything with such intensity. He was such a Scrooge. He was such a collector. He was, I mean, unbelievable. And he was shut down because he had experienced love. So he had so much trouble. He never once told us. I never once had my father say, Dad, you know, I love you or whatever. Never once. Now, by putting myself in his shoes or trying to understand what has produced such a person to act in such a way, it didn't justify what my father did. But it's allowed me to be able to walk away and to not carry the wounds or the pain of having a father who was never there, having a father who didn't love you, who didn't take care of you, who wouldn't pay for even when I got ready to go to university, for prep school, my father wouldn't give me one dime. Unbelievable. My father had this rap, is that I'm saving all the money so when the kids go to the university, I'll cover their university. And so just as he thought, nobody went to the university except me. So he didn't have to pay anybody. And when I got ready to go, not a dime. So it was a way he could pretend for 20 years, I'm going to take care of my children. When they get ready to go to university, then I'll provide. Anyway, my father, bless his soul, he's passed on, etc. Now, but sometimes we have to make personal examples to show certain principles. Also, because sometimes in sannyasis, people say, oh yeah, my wife's talking all this stuff, but he's a sannyasi. You know, what does he know? He didn't suffer, even this and that. He doesn't have children, he doesn't have girlfriends, he doesn't have a wife, he doesn't have to pay bills. Okay, so here we deal with that many times, if we just try to consider what has happened to that person, what is that person's position that has caused them to act in a certain way, it won't stop us from seeing that it's wrong, because it was wrong. It doesn't cause us to let it happen again, but it can help us to have more ability to be able to forgive so we can help ourselves. So there are times when we have to try to appreciate a little bit better how and why this person did this, so that we can at least be able to understand the situation better so we can help ourselves. So we're looking at how we kind of take our own spiritual life more in our own hands as we associate more, as we share more, and also how we can guarantee more sense of, you know, being able to see the progress. Now I'm going to do a last thing, and then we'll take a few questions. And we can, you know, doing some discussions of darshans or personal exchanges, if you want, I can try to help you to walk through some of these things, and if possible, later through email, because it's one of the serious issues that we all experiencing in different ways. And we saw that when you held that person in your mind, if you felt too uncomfortable, you felt anger, you felt disgust, you felt like you were being assaulted again, whatever happened, you're being cheated again, then you got to look closer and stop letting that individual reach out and attack you, you know, again and again. Now, one thing you can also do, especially those of you who are parents, this will help you even more. Think about that person who has been a problem for you, you know, in your life. And perhaps you've forgiven, perhaps you're not, but the person has definitely been a problem. Especially if you have not forgiven that problem, that person, just consider that that person, whatever he or she did to you, is your son or your daughter. Right now, we're all going to be parents for a little while, okay? Even if you're a Brahmachari, let's take it in the past life, it was your son. Okay. What we're saying is that the person who actually hurt you, who cheated you, the person that you have an issue with of not being able to forgive, I want you to allow that person to be your son or daughter. You understand? That person who is disgusting to you in some ways, is willing to hurt you, I want you to let that person be right now your son or your daughter. And I want you just to choose a partner. You just choose somebody next to you. And I want you to tell, to speak to that person and ask that person to forgive your son or daughter. Just summarizing the pain, the hurt, the cheat that that person has done to you, but now you're thinking of it in terms of that's your son. Here's an example. If somebody has sexually abused you when you were a young girl, and this has hurt you, and you from time to time you have to revisit this. Now I want you to consider that that father, big brother, whoever, is actually now your son, who has done this to the person who you're speaking with, who is your partner. And I want you to ask that person to forgive who is now being your son, who actually was your offender, your attacker. I want you to speak to that person next to you in the spirit that you want them to forgive. You just summarize very brief what has happened, please. Be open. And ask the person next to you to forgive this individual who has disappointed, harmed, cheated you. And you have to now explain some reasons why you feel they should forgive this person. Anybody need clarification? I want to summarize real quick. What we want you to do, you think of the person who's hurt you, offended you, the person who needs to be forgiven because they did something improper to you. But now I want you to allow that person to be temporarily your son or your daughter who has done this. They've genuinely done something wrong. And you're not covering up for what they did. They did something wrong. But you're asking the person next to you to forgive your son or daughter who did this situation, and you're trying to explain why this person should be forgiven. All right? You can do that. Everyone take a partner. We all got somebody who we need to forgive on some level, because existence means that we've been disappointed, we've been hurt, we've been cheated, we've been abused. people who are supposed to be there for us, weren't there for us. So we're just trying to do this last exercise, you know, before we end the class. You just, for everybody, find a partner. And the person who has given you the pain, that person now is your son or is your daughter. And you want to beg. This is what we were doing, you know, the kirtan day. You know, it's the kirtan day. We were doing our little dance, pushing away Maya. We're doing our little dance, begging for mercy, running for Krishna. So we're going to do a beg for mercy right now, okay? You are merciful. Devotees have been merciful. Something has definitely happened. But now you are asking that person to forgive this individual who has offended you. But now this person is your son or your daughter. You choose whether you want it to be your son or daughter. But you explain to them some reasons why they should forgive this person. Okay? Let's go for it. Everyone take a partner. You just turn to someone. I'm asking you, do what you like. When everyone, if possible, to, you know, you just try to ask them to forgive this individual who has offended you, but now this person is your son. So you're acting as if they've offended your partner. The person you're next to, you're acting as if they offended your partner, and that person who's offended your partner is your son. But it's really someone who offended you, actually. Okay. Excuse the complexity of language. We can have your attention the last 2 minutes or so. So, also, forgiveness is not always something that happens just on the spot. For some people, it is more gradual. That is, for some people who genuinely want to forgive, even when we understand the necessity for our own spiritual life, our psychological well-being, our physical well-being, that it still can happen in stages, because for many people we have held in stuff so long and we've developed such an identity with whatever has happened that's unfortunate within our life. And it's causing us to cheat ourselves in so many ways. It's causing us to undergo a tremendous amount of pain. Some of us are paining every day with great depression and even great physical pains that's connected with not being able to release some experience, some persons, some situations out of our life. We have ability to be more joyful, more animated, more spiritual, and to be able to facilitate our communities much more by bringing a better ourself into the environment. We can't save the world when we're so wounded. How can we heal the world? We're so wounded, how can we heal our communities? How can we rebuild our communities when we're shooting ourselves in the foot and lacking the ability to do what's necessary to be able to bring about, you know, transformation and rejuvenation? So each of us has to look more in our own lives to try to see how we can guarantee more successful advancement by not letting somebody else's Maya keep attacking us, not letting some honest mistakes that also happen. In some cases, people did the best that they could do with the skills and the ability that they had. Like in the case of my father, he did the best that he could do with what his own experiences and what his skills, in fact, were. That whoever's hurt us, disappointed us, cheated us, wasn't there for us, that we don't forget it. Because if we forget, then we can allow it to happen, or we miss a chance to grow from it. But we want to leave the pain of that behind. We don't want to deny how serious it was. And if we were in a position to see that some chastisement is taking place, we want that to happen. But also, how much we want the person to suffer before we can free ourselves from causing our own selves, see, to suffer. Notice how when you let that person be your son or daughter, there's a shift in your consciousness. Because if your own son or daughter had stolen something, had cheated somebody, had sexually abused someone, you would be very disturbed, but you'd be very hurt, and you would also plead for mercy. The person who harmed you, cheated you, disappointed you, is somebody's son and somebody's daughter. The person who wasn't there for you, sometimes to the degree that they were obnoxious to you is to the degree that they're paining within themselves. To the degree that they are destructive, obnoxious, is to the degree that they have some internal pain that they're dealing with themselves. And just as you don't want to be pained, or you don't want to be not forgiven when you've hurt someone, especially when it's unconscious. When Prabhupada said he must do something in previous life, he's letting us know that there are some things that go way back in previous lifetimes, that sometimes we have things that happen to us that are wretched, but it lets us burn off so much karma from the past so we can step into the future. And many times, some very heavy things that have happened to us are there to help us to be so much better persons and better devotees, because people who have been there and it's happened to them, they have greater empathy and sympathy to be able to serve. You know, there are people who've had, like, here's an example, and we'll end with this. There's some people now who are so devastated. They had one child, and the child got killed, got ran over by a drunken driver. Their life is, like, finished. They can't have any more children. The child they had, they love so much, only child, their soul was affection for them, so much affection they had for him, and that child got killed by a drunk driver. Sometimes that person, in order to really to move out of that, they first have to own it and recognize and really, you know, be able to deal with, yes, this is horrible, it's wretched, and I'm hurting. And because I'm hurting so bad, I'm going to use this in a positive way, and I'm going to create a situation or join an organization that's helping to deal with drunken drivers so that somebody else's child doesn't have this. Now they allow their own child to live on. They use their pain to energize them to be able to create value in society, to help others who have experienced that, to help others to avoid that experience. And now they become a better person from that great, tremendous trauma that's happened to them. Instead of them allowing it to be a scar for them, they've allowed it to be almost like a star of helping them to understand, to help, and to be proactive in a very awesome way. So how much we have been wounded, we can become the best in some area based on that, to be able to caretake and be able to prevent such that is happening. But if we're constantly telling ourselves, I'm the victim, I'm the victim, I'm the victim, and I should be painting, I shouldn't be able to be successful, I'm not worthy of being loved because of what has happened to me, then not only would it happen sometimes for the rest of this life, but it can even go on and carry itself even into another life. We have the choice to stop a lot of our suffering by the choices that we make. Putting ourselves in another position, person position, we get more variables to analyze, realizing that no ultimate accidents are there. And so for some reason, this is part of our growth, part of our own battle crew, etc., that we have to deal with. Being ready to live in the present while we learn from the future, while we learn from the past and look toward the future. Realizing how suffering in the past can use it to make us stronger. Agreeing to be loving now, understanding karma in a deeper way. Ready to be, you know, a higher level sisadhu, where we have stronger communities. And at least we can avoid the money and the difficulties from dealing with a sick body. We can avoid the difficulties in feeling very useless because we're physically and mentally, you know, a wreck. And we can leave this body having felt that as the body gradually deteriorates anyway, having felt that we did the best we could with what we had while we could, and at the same time we try to understand others' pains while we're dealing with our own difficulties, etc. So, you know, I think, you know, if you can maybe reflect, maybe, let me just take I'm going to take 2 minutes, I keep saying it. Can one or two of you just share with us a little realization that you get from when you shared, you know, just now? Can you please come? Can you come up and share? Yeah, did you speak to somebody? You spoke to Sringadev? All right, no problem. No problem. Yes, can you share with us? You know, and maybe one other person, if you could just share, when you spoke to the person next to you, what realization, you know, was coming to you? Yes, can you share? Yes.
Yeah, well, the reason why most people do things...
Yeah, I want you to share something personal. Did you have some personal realization?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the realization I got was that ignorance of where other people are at and just ignorance in general is why people act in the way they do, because they don't understand where other people are at. They just, it's selfishness or ignorance, or in person, you know, they're not caring about people's feelings or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Generous ignorance.
This is very deep. So what he got from that is that so many times people who do something wrong, they do it out of some ignorance. Some people, you know, calculated about their deviation, but many people, they do something wrong out of ignorance. And sometimes out of our own ignorance, we just hang in there and accept only the action and become, you know, very disturbed. Thank you very much. Is there someone else who can share? Mm-hmm.
Just that when I was a child, I was...
Maybe you can...
When I was a child, I was pariahized by all the other kids, or many of the other kids, most of them. And it took me 52 years to figure out precisely the reason why. And the only thing that I can trace it out to is that as we walk along the sidewalks and so forth, we're stepping on all kinds of living entities. We're killing them, we're hurting them, we're causing so much pain. There's so many other living entities, and we don't even know that this is what's happening. And so I think that many of them have come back to give back to me what I gave to them. So when I was a child, they prioritized me. And I didn't understand that so many different people attributed it to this thing or that thing. But by the time I was 52, I understood that the soul knows everything. The uncovered soul already understands everything.
Okay, so part of...
These kids looked at me and they knew. She's going to go back home to Ghana before me. She's got so much wonderfulness in her future, and I don't have any of that. And so they just freaked completely out. So we can forgive. I forgave them when I was 52, and I learned to love them. And I really do love these people. Now I can go to each one of them, give them a big hug, give them a kiss, and tell them I love you. Do you know that I love you? I love you all.
Okay, so part of your realization is that from looking at some of the things that happened to you in the past, from your understanding of philosophy and your reflection, little reflection now, you realize, one, we've all hurt so many people, even insects and other things, and that some of these things are part of some karma unfoldment. Uh-huh. Yes.
I realized from making the person my child,
yes,
it made me feel unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
Your child would forget, so don't have. Doesn't matter what they do,
yeah,
how they did it. I just said, wow, I couldn't
forgive them.
Mm-hmm.
So that made me be very forgiving. Yes. So in her case, she's just focusing on if this person who's done some evil, some assault, some abuse, is your child. Even though you find out that your child has really been responsible, that the parent will feel that mercy, you know, should be extended. And so she was able to have a different reflection by realizing, if that was my child who's the one who's hurt or harmed me or abused me or disappointed me, I would want mercy. And for some of us, it can help us to consider, well, then we should extend some mercy also toward the person who has disappointed us. Anyone else? Okay, yes, please.
Actually, I had to reflect on my own older kids, and come to the conclusion that even though I have a lot of great affection for them, they do a lot of things that I don't necessarily approve of. Yet at the same time, I love them. But if they continue on doing those things, then I also have to distance myself from them. So. I would like the analogy of some people you embrace and some people you have to give you respects from a distance, even if they are your own children. So that's the limit of
Okay, we'll stop there. So his realization is that even when they're your own children, there are times that you still can love them, but you have to remove yourself or remove them from the environment. You have to love them at a distance. But still, in your reflection, your love was still there. And this is the example, as Claudia is bringing out, by scripture, somebody's done something wrong. They ought to be chastised. They ought to be called out. And even in the case of where it's our children, they also should be chastised and should be called out. But we also want to be able to have some understanding that their welfare is being addressed, that they're being forgiven, and that their future will be something better. So for those people who have offended us, abused us, cheated us, exploited us, we realize that they are someone's son or someone's daughter. We realize that they're also carrying some various karma, that many of them, to the degree that they're suffering, is the degree that they're dysfunctional, and some of that has assaulted us. And we realize that the major quality of a brahmana and distinct quality of a sadhu, we read in Bhagavad Gita, is one is shama, or forgiving. And just from a secular and physical and psychological perspective, we don't want to keep allowing something that's happened that was real to just jump out and beat us again and again. We don't want to keep carrying these hot coals burning ourselves. We have to take better care of ourselves. And if we do that by a better individual, we have a better family and we have a better community. Better individuals, we have a better community. ISKCON Founder Chari Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Dhirwad Ki Vaishnava Dhakor Ki.